Many philosophers and some of the greatest thinkers of all times throughout the ages have wrestled with the question, how shall we live in order to be happy? From the earliest ages of man right up to the present day, some of the finest minds that have ever lived have studied and written on success and happiness in the human condition. There's more practical information available today on how to achieve success in any field than there ever has been at any time. Yet even with all this wealth of information, only 5% of the population are financially independent at the end of their working lives. Fully 80% of people working today would rather be doing something else, and 84% of the employed population, by their own admission, feel that they are working below, if not far below, their potentials. Only 5% of men and women feel that they're producing at their full capacities in their jobs. Not only that, but more people are sick, overweight, unfit, and unhealthy than ever before. The United States spends more of its gross national product on health care than any other nation, and the costs are increasing. Today we know that an enormous amount of illness and disease is caused by negative mental attitudes and unhappiness of various kinds. America is a free society. All choices are open to the individual. People can do anything, be anything, go anywhere, change any part of their life for the better whenever they want. Why is it then that so many people persist in their negativity and pessimism when they're free to think anything they want? Why is it that so few people are living up to their potential? I believe that the reason there is so much underachievement and frustration is simply because people do not know how to get the most out of themselves. They don't know how to operate themselves for maximum performance and happiness. I'll give you an illustration. Imagine that someone gave you an expensive, sophisticated personal computer. It was delivered to your home, and when you opened it up and took all the parts out of the boxes, you found that there was only one thing missing, the instruction manual. Now imagine that you had no training at all in computers or in computer language. Then imagine that you now had to figure out how the computer worked, how to set it up, how to operate it, and how to get it to produce something of value. How long do you think it would take you, working without help or guidance, to figure out how to use a personal computer? The answer is that even if you are highly motivated and determined, it would probably take you years to figure out how to operate a computer on your own. And it's a certainty that long before that, you would have turned your mind to other things and gone back to doing your work in the same old, slow fashion. Now, let's imagine that you received the same computer, but this time it came complete with an instruction manual that was user-friendly. And in addition to that, a computer consultant came along and showed you, step by step, how to set up the computer, how to operate it, how to program it, and how to run it at maximum efficiency. With the instruction manual and expert training, you could have the computer up and running in an afternoon. From then on, you would get better and better at using the computer, and the quality and quantity of what you produced would increase at a rapid rate. The point that I'm making is this. The reason that the average person functions so far below his or her potential is because we come into this world with no instruction manual. We're born with an amazing brain, the complexities and possibilities of which are so vast that we cannot yet understand or explain them. This marvelous 3-pound organ contains as many as 100 billion cells and processes 100 million bits of information per hour. It maintains a perfect chemical balance in every one of the body's billions of cells through the autonomic nervous system. Properly used, your powerful brain can take you from rags to riches, from loneliness to popularity, from sickness to radiant health, and from depression to happiness and joy. This entire course can be viewed as an instruction manual that is designed to help you get the most out of yourself. It will do this by showing you how to harness the amazing power of your mind to bring you anything you really want in life. I will be your personal instructor, and I will show you how to do it. I will show you how to unlock your capacity for high achievement. You may already know that there are two types of laws in the universe: man-made laws and natural laws. You can violate man-made laws like traffic laws, and you may or may not get caught. But if you attempt to violate natural laws, you get caught every single time without exception. These natural laws can be divided into two categories, physical and mental. The operation of physical laws can be proven in controlled experiments and in the laboratory. Mental laws, however, can only be proven by experience and intuition, and by demonstrating their effectiveness in your own life. Some of the mental laws that you will learn in this course were written as far back as 2,000 years BC, or 4,000 years ago. In the ancient world, these laws or principles were only taught in what were then called the mystery schools. Students would enter these schools and undergo a long period of training, taking many years, during which they would be gradually introduced, one at a time, to these principles. In those days, they were never meant to be shared with the general public. The heads of these ancient schools felt that the average person would misunderstand and misuse these laws, and at that time they were probably right. Today, most of these laws are discussed and written about quite openly, although only a tiny fraction of the population is even aware of them. In studying the lives and stories of successful men and women, I found that almost all of them used these laws, consciously or unconsciously, and as a result, they were often able to accomplish more in 2 or 3 years than the average person accomplishes in a lifetime. In fact, all real and lasting success comes from organizing your life in harmony with these general principles. Now, here's an important point. Mental laws are like physical laws in that they are also in force 100% of the time. The law of gravity, for instance, works everywhere on planet Earth 24 hours per day. If you jump from a 10-story building in downtown New York or downtown Tokyo, you will go splat on the sidewalk with equal force. It doesn't matter whether or not you know about gravity, or whether or not you agree with gravity, or whether or not anyone ever told you about gravity when you were growing up. The law is no respecter of persons. To that extent, it's neutral. It works for you everywhere, regardless of whether you know about it or whether or not it's particularly convenient for you. Mental laws, although their physical effects can't be seen quite so easily, also work 100% of the time. Whenever your life is going great, it usually means that your thoughts and activities are aligned and in harmony with these invisible mental laws. Whenever you're having problems in your life, it's almost always because you've violated one or more of these laws, whether you know about them or not. And you can always tell if you're violating them by the results you're getting, either positive or negative. The first of these laws is called the law of control. The law of control simply says that you feel positive about yourself to the degree to which you feel that you are in control of your own life. And you feel negative about yourself to the degree to which you feel that you are not in control, or that you're controlled by some external force or person or influence. This law or principle is widely recognized in psychology. It's called the locus of control theory. It's generally agreed that most stress, anxiety, tension, and much psychosomatic illness comes about as a result of feeling out of control or not in control of some important part of your life. For example, if you feel controlled by your debts or your boss or your ill health or your bad relationship or the behavior of others, then, according to this law, you'll suffer a good deal of stress. Now, you can have either an internal locus of control, that is, you feel that you are behind the wheel of your own life, that you are the architect of your own destiny and the master of your own fate, or you can have an external locus of control. An external locus of control is when you feel helpless, like a victim, and unable to change some aspect of your life that's making you unhappy. You feel trapped. In every case, control begins with your thoughts, the only thing over which you do have complete control. How you think about any situation determines your feelings or emotions about that situation. And your feelings determine your actions or what you do or refrain from doing in that situation. Practicing self-discipline, self-mastery, self-control begins with taking charge of your thinking. It begins with accepting that no situation can make you feel anything. It is only the way you think about a situation that can cause you to experience an emotion of any kind. We'll talk about the subject of control extensively as we proceed through this course, but it's interesting to note that you can assert control of a situation in basically two ways. First, you can take action. you can move forward and do something to change the situation. You can assert yourself in the situation and make it different somehow. And second, you can simply walk away. It may surprise you to learn that you can often reassert control in a situation by letting it go and turning your mind and your activities to other things. Sometimes the very best thing to do in a situation where you feel out of control is just to walk away. If you've ever left an unpleasant relationship or quit an unhappy job, you'll remember how much better you felt when you stopped struggling with the situation. You felt back in control. The second law is the law of cause and effect, what the philosopher Socrates called the law of causality. The law of cause and effect says that for every effect in your life, there is a specific cause. This has also been called the iron law of the universe. It says that everything happens for a reason, by law, whether or not we know what it is. There are no accidents. We live in a universe governed strictly by law, and this is one of the most important of those laws. The law of cause and effect says that there are specific causes for success, and there are specific causes of failure. There are specific causes for health and illness. There are specific causes for happiness and unhappiness. If there's an effect in your life that you want more of, you merely need to trace it back to the causes and repeat the causes. If there's an effect in your life that you don't enjoy, you need to trace it back to the causes and get rid of them. There's a Scottish proverb that says, "It is better to light one wee candle than to curse the darkness." It is better by far to sit down and carefully analyze the reasons for your difficulties than to get upset and angry about them. In the book of Proverbs it says, "Whatsoever a man soweth, that also shall he reap." We commonly call this application of the law of cause and effect the law of sowing and reaping. It says that whatever you sow, you will reap. It also says that whatever you're reaping today is the result of what you've sown in the past. If you wish to reap a different harvest in any area of your life in the future, you simply need to plant different seeds today. And of course, this refers primarily to mental seeds. The most important application of the law of cause and effect, or sowing and reaping, is this. Thoughts are causes and conditions are effects. Your thoughts are the causes of the conditions in your life. Everything in your experience has begun with a thought or thoughts, yours or others. All causation is mental. Everything you are or ever will be as a result of the way you think. If you change the quality of your thinking, you'll change the quality of your life. The change in your outer experience will follow the change in your inner experience. The third law is the law of belief. The law of belief simply says that whatever you believe with feeling or emotion becomes your reality. The more intensely that you believe something to be true, the more likely it is that it will be true for you. Your beliefs tend to give you a form of tunnel vision. Your beliefs edit out or ignore incoming information that is inconsistent with what you've decided to believe. William James of Harvard supported this concept when he said, "Belief creates the actual fact." In the Bible it says, "According to your faith or belief, it is done unto you." To put it another way, you do not necessarily believe what you see, but you see what you already believe. The fact is that if you absolutely believe that you are meant to be successful and happy in your endeavors, then no matter what happens, you will continue to press forward towards your goals. On the other hand, if you believe that success is a matter of luck or accident, then you'll tend to become discouraged and disappointed whenever things don't work out for you. People generally have one of two ways of looking at the world. The first is with what is called a benevolent worldview. If you have a benevolent worldview, you generally believe that the world is a pretty good place in which to live. You have a tendency to see the good in people and situations and to believe that there's plenty of opportunity around you and that you can take advantage of it. You believe that, although you may not be perfect, you're a pretty good person overall. The second way of looking at the world is with a malevolent worldview. A person with a malevolent worldview has a generally negative and pessimistic attitude toward himself or herself and towards life. He or she generally believes that you can't fight City Hall or that the rich get richer and the poor get poorer, and that no matter how hard you work, you can't get ahead because the deck is stacked against you. This type of person sees injustice, oppression, and misfortune everywhere. When things go wrong for them, as they usually do, they blame it on bad luck or bad people, and they are therefore easily discouraged. Because of this attitude, they don't really like or respect themselves very much. Needless to say, people with a benevolent worldview tend to be the movers and shakers, the builders and creators of the future. They tend to be more optimistic and cheerful, and they tend to see the world as a better and brighter place in which to live. They have an upbeat mental attitude that enables them to respond positively and constructively to the inevitable ups and downs of day-to-day life. A key part of your journey toward success is the development and maintenance of this benevolent or positive worldview. This brings us to some of the major roadblocks that you must overcome if you're going to become everything you're capable of becoming, and we call these your self-limiting beliefs. These are areas where you believe, consciously or unconsciously, that you are limited in some way. Perhaps you feel that you are limited in intelligence because you got average or mediocre grades in school. Perhaps you feel you're limited in creative capacity or in your ability to learn and remember. Perhaps you feel that you're not very outgoing or very smart about money. Some people feel that they can't lose weight or quit smoking or be attractive to members of the opposite sex. But whatever your belief, if you believe it strongly enough, it will become your reality. You will always tend to walk, talk, behave, and interact with others in a manner consistent with your beliefs. The wonderful fact of the matter is that most of your self-limiting beliefs are not based on reality at all. They are based on negative information that has been given to you or that you have internalized and accepted as true. Once you've accepted it as true, belief does create the actual fact. As Henry Ford said, if you believe that you can do a thing, or if you believe you cannot, in either case, you are right. In subsequent sessions, you'll learn how to build a strong, confident belief system on the inside, one that is completely consistent with what you want to achieve on the outside. In the meantime, you should begin to identify any self-limiting beliefs that might be holding you back. Often, your spouse or a trusted friend can help you recognize and identify self-limiting ideas and beliefs that you are unaware of. Remember, they do just as much harm if you don't know about them as if you do. Law number 4 is the law of expectation. This mental law says whatever you expect, with confidence, becomes your own self-fulfilling prophecy. To put it another way, what you get is not necessarily what you want in life, but what you expect. Your expectations of people and situations exert a powerful, invisible influence that causes people to behave and situations to work out just as you expect them to. In a way, you're always acting as a fortune teller in your own life by the way you talk about how you think things are going to turn out. Successful men and women invariably have an attitude of confident, positive self-expectancy. They expect to be successful. They expect to be liked, to be happy in advance, and they are very seldom disappointed. Unsuccessful people tend to create a climate of negative expectations, of cynicism, pessimism, and negativity that somehow causes situations to work out exactly as they expected. In his book, Pygmalion in the Classroom, Dr. Robert Rosenthal of Harvard University describes how the expectations of teachers have an enormous impact on the performance of their students. He also found that if students felt that they were expected to do well, they did much better than they would have in the absence of those expectations. There are 4 areas of expectations that have an impact on your life. The first is the expectations of your parents. We are all unconsciously programmed to try to live up to or down to the expectations that our parents expressed of us when we were growing up. The need for the approval of our parents goes on even after our parents are no longer with us. If your parents expected you to do well and confidently, positively encouraged you to do your best and be your best, this will have had an enormous influence on the person you have become. If, as happens in many cases, your parents expressed negative expectations of you or no expectations at all, you may still be unconsciously saddled with the burden of trying not to disappoint your parents. In one study, 90% of prisoners interviewed by psychologists in the U.S. penal system reported that they had been told over and over again by their parents when they were growing up that someday you're going to end up in jail. And they said, "We didn't disappoint our parents. Here we are." The second area of expectations that affects your behavior is the expectations that your boss has of your performance. People who work under bosses who have positive expectations are always happier, perform better, and get more done than those who work under bosses who are negative or critical. Consciously and unconsciously, you need to be aware that you are inordinately influenced by the expectations of people who you respect and who are important to you. That is why it's doubtful that you'll ever be happy or successful working with or for people who operate in a climate of negative expectations. The third area of expectations is the expectations that you have of your children, your spouse, and your employees or staff. You have an enormous impact on the personality, the behavior, and the performance of the people who look up to you for guidance and feedback. The more important you are in the life of someone else, the more powerfully will your expectations affect their performance. Perhaps the most consistently effective and predictable motivational behavior is for you to confidently and constantly expect the best from others. People always try not to disappoint you. I always tell my children, "You're the best in the West. You're the best in the West." I tell them that I think they're wonderful children, that they're going to do great things with their lives. Does this have an impact? You better believe it. Try it yourself and see. Many successful people attribute much of their advance in life to the influence of someone they respected who constantly expressed confidence in their ability to achieve. Perhaps the kindest thing that you can do for another person is to say, "I believe in you. I know you can do it." The fourth area of expectations is the expectations that you have of yourself. The wonderful thing about expectations is that you can manufacture your own. You can create your own mental set, your own way of approaching the world, confidently expecting the very best of yourself in every situation. Your expectations of yourself are powerful enough to override any and all negative expectations that anybody might ever have had about you. You can create a force field of positive mental energy around you by confidently expecting to gain something from every situation. W. Clement Stone is famous for being an inverse paranoid. An inverse paranoid is someone who believes that the universe is conspiring to do him good. An inverse paranoid sees every situation as being heaven-sent to confer some benefit or teach some valuable lesson to help make him successful. This form of inverse paranoia is the foundation of a positive mental attitude. This is the most outwardly identifiable quality of a high-performing man or woman. One of our seminar graduates, who was unemployed at the time, told me that he began saying to himself every morning, "I believe something wonderful is going to happen to me today." He repeated this over and over until he developed an expectant attitude that caused him to look forward to every event of the day. The amazing thing was that a series of wonderful things began to happen to him. After being unemployed for 6 months, he received 2 job offers within the first week after beginning this exercise. His financial problems and legal difficulties seemed to clear themselves up miraculously. Wonderful things began to happen to him at every turn. Just imagine if you went around all day believing that something wonderful was about to happen to you. Think how much more positive, optimistic, and cheerful you would be if you were absolutely convinced that everything was conspiring to make you happy and successful. I can promise you this. If you tried this exercise for 3 days, at the end of the third day, so many wonderful things will have happened to you that you will not be able to recount them all. You can never rise any higher than your expectations of yourself. Since they're completely under your control, be sure that your expectations are consistent with what you want to see happen. Guard them carefully. When you start consciously working with these mental laws, you have in your hands a power that is virtually unlimited, and the power of positive expectations alone can change your whole personality and your whole life as well. The fifth law is the law of attraction. Many books have been written about this law, and many people feel that this law is central to understanding the human condition. The law of attraction says that you are a living magnet, and that you inevitably attract into your life people and situations in harmony with your dominant thoughts, that birds of a feather flock together, and that everything that is in your life you have attracted to yourself because of the person you are, because of your thoughts. Your friends, your family, your relationships, your job, your problems, and your opportunities have all been attracted to you because of your habitual way of thinking in each area. In music, this is called the principle of sympathetic resonance. For example, if you have two pianos in a large room and you strike the note of C on one piano and then walk across the room to the other piano, you will find that the string of C on the other piano is vibrating at the same rate of vibration as on the first piano. By the same token, you'll tend to meet and become involved with people in situations that are vibrating in harmony with your own dominant thoughts and emotions. Remember, all causation is mental. As you look around you at every aspect of your life, positive or negative, you must realize that your entire world is of your own making. And the more emotion you attach to a thought, the more rapidly you attract people and situations in harmony with that thought into your life. The law of attraction, like the other mental laws, is neutral. It can help you or hinder you. Actually, this law could be considered a subset of the law of cause and effect, or sowing and reaping. That's why the philosopher said, "Sow a thought, and you reap an act. Sow an act, and you reap a habit. Sow a habit, and you reap a character. Sow a character, and you reap a destiny." The wonderful thing about the law of attraction is that you can have more and be more and do more because you can change the person you are. You can change your dominant thoughts by exercising rigorous self-discipline and self-control, and by keeping your thoughts on what you do want and off of what you don't want. The sixth mental law is the law of correspondence, which says simply, as within, so without. It says that your outer world is a reflection of your inner world, and that you can tell what's going on inside you by looking at what is going on around you. In the Bible, this principle is explained with the words, "By their fruits ye shall know them." Everything in your life is from the inner to the outer. Your external world of manifestation is merely an expression that corresponds with your internal world of thought and emotion. Your outer world of relationships will exactly correspond to your true inner personality. Your outer world of health will correspond to your inner attitudes of mind. Your outer world of income and financial achievement will exactly correspond to your inner world of preparation. The way people respond and react to you will correspond exactly with your attitude and your behavior toward them. In fact, the car you drive and the condition you keep it in will correspond to your state of mind at any given time. When you're feeling positive and confident and in control of your life, your home, your car, and your workplace will tend to be well organized and efficient. When you feel overwhelmed with work or frustrated and unhappy, your car, your workplace, your home, even your closets will tend to reflect this state of disarray and confusion. You can see the effects of this law of correspondence everywhere in your life. The seventh and last law in this session is the law of mental equivalency. This can also be called the law of mind and could actually be considered a summary of all the previous laws. Basically, it says that thoughts objectify themselves. Your thoughts, vividly imagined and repeated, charged with emotion, become your reality. Almost everything that you have in your life has been created by your own thinking, for better or for worse. Put another way, thoughts are things. Earl Nightingale called it the strangest secret, and he said, in effect, you become what you think about. Ernest Holmes also gave us the key when he said, if you change your thinking, you change your life. Everything that happens in your life first begins and takes place in the form of thought. This is why thoughtfulness is a key quality of successful men and women. Becoming a skilled thinker in your own life means using your mental powers in such a way that they will serve your best interests all of the time. When you choose to start thinking in a positive, confident way about the main areas of your life, you begin to exert and feel a sense of control. You sow positive causes and reap positive effects. You begin to believe in yourself and your possibilities. You tend to expect positive outcomes. You attract positive people and situations, and soon your outer life of results will begin to correspond to your inner world of constructive thinking. And this transformation all begins with your thoughts. Change your thinking, and you must change your life. Your job is to create the mental equivalent of what you want to experience in your reality. Now, take some time, based on the action of these mental laws, to think about how your habitual modes of thought have created every aspect of your life today. First, think about your relationships. What is it in your attitudes, your beliefs, your expectations, and your behaviors that is causing your problems with other people? Second, think about your health. What are your ideas and beliefs about your weight, your level of fitness, your personal appearance, your diet, and your rest? Third, think about your career. How do your thoughts affect your position, your progress, the quality of your work, and the amount of satisfaction you get from what you do? Fourth, think about your level of financial achievement. What would you like to increase or improve? What are your beliefs and expectations concerning your aspirations? How much would you like to earn, and why, and what are your beliefs about that? Fifth, think about your inner life, your thoughts, your feelings, your peace of mind and happiness. What beliefs and attitudes and expectations are creating your world as it is today? Which of them do you want to change? If you're honest with yourself, you will find that you have self-limiting ways of thinking in one or more of these areas. This is quite normal. Honestly facing the facts about yourself is the starting point of rapid self-improvement. Your subconscious mind is an amazing powerhouse that, when properly used, can move you rapidly toward the achievement of your goals and your desires. Your subconscious can be used for creation or destruction, for good or for ill. It can and will make you a prince or a pauper, depending on the way it's programmed. To fulfill your potential, you must learn how to tap into your subconscious mind at will and use it for your purposes intelligently and constructively. My lawyer was showing me through his offices not long ago. He took me into the typing pool, where there were several secretaries typing letters and legal documents. Each of the secretaries was hooked into a mini-computer that was available and accessible to all of them. As we left the room, he explained to me that he and his partners had spent more than $100,000 on the computer setup, which they'd purchased about 2 years ago. He told me that when it was first installed, all of the secretaries working there at the time were trained thoroughly in how to use the computer to dramatically increase the quality and quantity of legal work they could produce. Over time, he said, most of the originally trained secretaries had left or gone on to other things. They were replaced one by one with legal secretaries who unfortunately had no computer training. Because we're so busy, he said, no one has had a chance to go back and train those new secretaries on how to get the most out of our computer system. So now, instead of using this computer for advanced information and word processing, our secretaries simply use it as a glorified typewriter, typing one letter or one document at a time and spending many hours to produce what the mini computer could produce in a few minutes. Most people are like those secretaries. They work every day with their minds, but they use this powerful computer for only the most rudimentary tasks, and then they wonder why their work is so hard and why they seem to produce so little. Successful men and women, however, are those who have learned how to operate their conscious and subconscious minds together in harmony, thereby allowing them to achieve their goals far faster and with a great deal less effort. Imagine for a moment two balls stuck together, a golf ball and a basketball, with the golf ball on top. This picture represents the relative power and capability of your conscious and your subconscious minds, with the golf ball being your conscious mind and the basketball being your subconscious. The two minds are essential to each other, but they do have their own separate functions. The conscious mind, for example, is the objective or thinking mind. It has no memory, and it can only hold one thought at a time. This mind has four critical functions. Its first function is one of identification of incoming information. This is information received through any of the five senses: sight, hearing, smell, taste, or touch. To use a simple example of how this works, imagine that you are walking along the sidewalk and you step out into the street between two cars. At that moment, you hear the roar of an automobile engine. You immediately identify where the sound is coming from and turn and look in the direction of the moving automobile. The second function of your conscious mind is comparison. The information that you've seen and heard is immediately sent to your subconscious mind for comparison with all of your previous stored information and experiences with moving automobiles. If the car, for example, is a block away and moving at 30 miles per hour, based on your experience, your subconscious mind will tell you that there's no danger and that you can continue walking. If, on the other hand, the car is moving towards you at 60 miles per hour and it's only 100 yards away, you will get a danger message that will require further action on your part. The third function of your conscious mind is analysis, and analysis always precedes the fourth function, the making of a decision. Your conscious mind functions like a binary computer, accepting or rejecting data and making choices and decisions. It holds only one thought at a time, positive or negative, yes or no. So, you're walking across the street and you hear the roar of a moving automobile. You see that it's bearing down on you, and your analysis tells you that a decision is required. The first question is, do I get out of the way, yes or no? If the answer is yes, then the next question is, do I jump forward, yes or no? If the answer is no because of cross traffic, then the next question is, do I jump backward, yes or no? If the answer is yes, and added to that is the emotion of fear engendered by the danger involved, then the message is instantaneously transmitted to your subconscious control system, and in a split second, your whole body jumps back out of the way. Now, you didn't have to use your conscious mind to think about whether you should put your right foot or your left foot back first. Once you gave the command from your conscious mind to your subconscious, all the necessary nerves and muscles in your body were coordinated and put into action in a single instant to obey your conscious command. One scholar estimated that the subconscious mind functions at 30,000 times the speed of the conscious mind. You can demonstrate this difference in speed by holding your hand out in front of you and wiggling your fingers. You'll find it's quite easy because your subconscious mind is controlling the action. Then, try to thread a needle and see how much mental effort and concentration is necessary to perform a couple of small movements of your hand just using your conscious mind. Your subconscious mind is like a data storage or memory bank. Its function is to store and retrieve data, and to keep all of your words and actions consistent with your self-concept and your current mental programming. Even though your subconscious mind is like a computer data bank, it is subjective. It doesn't think or reason independently. It merely obeys the commands it receives from your conscious mind. If your conscious mind can be thought of as the gardener planting seeds, then your subconscious mind can be viewed as the garden or fertile soil in which the seeds sprout and grow. Your conscious mind commands, and your subconscious mind obeys. Your subconscious mind is an obedient servant that works day and night to make your external actions and results fit a pattern consistent with your emotionalized thoughts, hopes, desires, and goals. Your subconscious will grow either flowers or weeds, whichever you plant by your habitual modes of thinking. Your subconscious mind has what we call a homeostatic impulse. It keeps your body temperature at 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit, just as it keeps you breathing and your heart beating at a certain rate. It maintains a balance among the hundreds of chemicals in your billions of cells so that your entire physical machine functions in complete harmony most of the time. Your subconscious mind also practices homeostasis in the mental realm by keeping you thinking and acting in a manner consistent with what you've done and said in the past. All your habit patterns of thinking and acting are stored and maintained in your subconscious mind. Needless to say, your subconscious mind has memorized all your comfort zones, and it works to keep you in them. In the absence of any other instructions from your conscious mind, your subconscious mind will cause you to feel emotionally and physically uncomfortable whenever you move away from your established patterns of thought and behavior, even if you're moving in the direction of your desired goals. In a way, your subconscious mind functions like a gyroscope or a homing beam, keeping you on track based on the data and instructions that you have previously programmed into it. Now, there are several laws that determine the activity of your subconscious mind. The first is the law of subconscious activity. This says that any idea or goal accepted as true by your conscious mind will be accepted as a command by your subconscious mind, and your subconscious mind will immediately go to work to bring it into your reality. Your subconscious mind is the seat of the law of attraction, the sending station of mental vibrations and thought energy. When you begin to believe that something is possible for you, your subconscious mind begins broadcasting and you begin to attract people and circumstances and opportunities and ideas in harmony with your new dominant thoughts and goals. The subconscious mind also activates your reticular cortex. This is a small finger-like part of the brain that regulates the information in your environment that you will see, hear, and be aware of. This information regulator is often called the reticular activating system. For example, say you decide you want to buy a red sports car. You'll suddenly start to see red sports cars everywhere. If you start to plan a foreign trip, you'll begin to see articles, information, and posters on foreign places everywhere you go. Your subconscious mind is working to bring to your attention information that you may need to make your thought or goal a reality. Another important mental law is the law of concentration. This law says that whatever you dwell upon grows. The more you think about something, the more it becomes a part of your reality. This law of concentration is central to all great success. It's used by all high-achieving men and women. When you dwell upon anything, positive or negative, you are commanding your subconscious mind to assign more and more of the capacity of your mental computer toward bringing that into your life. This is why successful people think and talk only about what they want, and unsuccessful people tend to think and talk all the time about exactly the things that they don't want to happen. But whatever you dwell upon, it will begin to grow and become part of your life. The law of substitution is one of the most important of all the mental laws. It says simply that you can substitute one thought for another. It's well known that the conscious mind can only hold one thought at a time, positive or negative. But the conscious mind is never empty. It's always thinking about something. Using the law of substitution, you can eliminate any negative, fearful, or anxiety-causing thought from your conscious mind by substituting a positive thought in its place. This is a powerful method of mental control that enables you to keep your mind calm and at peace by choosing to think about something positive, like your goals, whenever you're faced with a situation that would normally make you upset or angry. A simple way to use the law of substitution is to stop talking and thinking about the problem and to start talking and thinking about the solution. Thinking about a solution is inherently positive, and it causes your mind to go calm and clear in an instant. Thinking about or focusing your thoughts on someone you care about or your next vacation is another way to use the law of substitution. The main thing is to find ways to keep your mind positive by consciously choosing to replace negative thoughts with positive thoughts. William James of Harvard said, "The greatest revolution of my generation is the discovery that human beings, by changing the inner attitudes of their minds, can change the outer aspects of their lives." The greatest obstacles to your developing the kind of personality you desire and increasing the quality and quantity of your results are your comfort zones, which bring us to the law of habit. Basically, this law says that everything you are and everything you do is the result of habit. In physical terms, it's like the law of inertia, which says that a body in motion tends to remain in motion unless acted upon by an outside force. In mental terms, the law of habit says that in the absence of a firm decision and a determined effort on your part, you will continue doing, saying, and thinking the same things indefinitely. You'll work in the same way. You'll relate to other people and get the same reactions from them as you've done in the past. You'll eat the same food, engage in the same leisure time activities, read the same types of books and publications, and associate with the same kinds of people. You will earn roughly the same amount of money, do the same amount of exercise, spend the same amount of time on personal and professional development, and live in the same kind of house, in the same kind of neighborhood, and drive the same kind of car. You see, both success and failure are largely the result of habit. Changing your habits is one of the hardest things that you'll ever do, but unless you're an angel already, you have certain habits that you need to discard, and there are other habits that is absolutely essential that you develop. Remember, bad habits are easy to form but hard to live with, whereas good habits are hard to form but easy to live with. Self-mastery, self-control, and self-discipline are essential habits that you must develop if you're going to make your life into the kind of glorious experience that is possible for you. In conjunction with the law of habit, there is also the law of practice, which says that whatever thought or action you repeat over and over again, often enough, becomes a new habit. You can develop any habit that you consider necessary or desirable. You can become the person you want to be if you will discipline yourself to act in a way that is consistent with your highest ideals long enough and hard enough for them to become new habits of thought and behavior. Finally, to round off your understanding of the laws that determine the activity of your subconscious mind and everything that happens to you, there's the law of emotion. The law of emotion says that 100% of your decisions are based on emotion. It used to be said that human beings are 90% emotional and 10% logical. But now we know that we are, in fact, 100% emotional. Every decision you make is determined by the dominant emotion that you are experiencing at that time. The two major clusters of emotion are fear and desire. We said before that fear is the great enemy of humankind. It's the cause of all our troubles, and it's a primary reason why people lead lives of quiet desperation and fail to find the health and happiness and prosperity they seek. Yet most of our decisions are made on the basis of fear rather than on the basis of our desires. The more decisions we make on the basis of fear of failure, of rejection, of loss, of criticism, of poverty, of ill health, the more likely we are to have those circumstances repeated in our lives. But there is a solution, and successful, happy people have found it. It is simply this. Use the law of substitution to think about only what you desire and keep your mind off of what you fear. Whatever you dwell upon grows. Your biggest challenge is to dwell upon the things that you want more of in your life. Since your conscious mind can only hold one thought at a time, if you spend all your time concentrating on the things that you want, by the principle of the excluded alternative, you'll find yourself spending little or no time thinking about what you fear or the things that you don't want. Here's a little story that illustrates this key point. Many years ago, in ancient Greece, a traveler met an old man on the road and asked him how to get to Mount Olympus. The old man, who turned out to be Socrates, replied by saying, "If you really want to get to Mount Olympus, just make sure that every step you take is in that direction." The moral of the story is simple. If you want to be successful and happy, if you want to get to your own Mount Olympus, just make sure that your every thought and every action are taking you in that direction and not somewhere else. Sir Isaac Newton is still considered to be the greatest scientist who ever lived. His breakthroughs in mathematics and physics laid the groundwork for the modern age. In his later years, he was asked how it was that he, one man, had managed to make such significant contributions to the world of science. He answered with these words. He said, "By thinking of nothing else." In its simplest terms, success begins with your exercising your power of choice and taking systematic, purposeful control over the thoughts that you allow yourself to hold in your conscious mind. By rigorously disciplining yourself to think and talk only about what you want, and by refusing to dwell upon the things that you don't want, you will begin your journey toward the stars. Now let's look at some of the ways that you can begin to bring your subconscious powerhouse to bear in creating the wonderful life that is possible for you. The quality of thoughtfulness goes hand in hand with the evolution of character and the development of personal effectiveness. A knowledge of the mental laws we've discussed so far is very helpful in giving you tools with which to think and to be more aware of who you are and how you got that way, and more importantly, how you can get to where you want to go in the future. Most people, unfortunately, spend their lives in a form of sleep. They go busily about their daily activities, almost totally preoccupied mentally with a continuous stream of disorganized thought. You've experienced this phenomenon yourself when you've gotten into your car and driven to work or across town, lost in thought, with almost no memory of the trip at all. Many of our habitual routines and conversations take place with a low level of awareness, almost as if we were in a mental fog, and with our having little or no recollection of the particular flow of events. Sometimes this preoccupation and busyness is deliberate, in that we use it to avoid thinking about parts of our life that we would rather not confront or deal with. Sometimes, most times in fact, it's just automatic. We've been going through the motions for so long that our thought processes are fuzzy and unfocused. We only wake up temporarily when we are shocked or surprised, as in traffic or scared or caught off guard. But as soon as we recover our composure, we slip back into the warm, gentle stream of waking consciousness where our thoughts just flow past amid a continual collage of feelings and images. Now, to become all you can be, it is necessary for you to become more alert, more aware, and more awake. It's necessary for you to take more control over your thought processes so that the combined power of all these mental laws is moving you in a direction of your own choosing rather than steering you blindly because you're operating on some form of mental autopilot. A good way to start this process of awakening or becoming more alert is by reflecting on parts of your life, past, present, and future. As an exercise in awareness, begin by imagining that before you were born, somewhere on the other side of the cosmos, you had evolved over many lifetimes to become a particular type of person with a particular set of qualities and interests and talents and abilities. Now, it doesn't matter what you think about the idea of reincarnation. This exercise is just that. It's an exercise with a point that will become clear in a moment. Continuing with this line of thought, imagine that you deliberately chose your parents and the situation you were born into and brought up in. You did this because, at your stage of personal growth and evolution, there were specific lessons about yourself, about life, and about other people that you had to learn, and which you could learn in no other way except by being born into that family at that time. Imagine also that the person you are today, especially your good qualities, evolved largely or partially as the result of the difficult experiences you had growing up, and especially as the result of the negative qualities demonstrated by one or both of your parents. Here's a question for you. If you had deliberately chosen your parents, and the person you are today has come about as a direct result, how would this discovery change your attitude toward your parents and your formative experiences growing up? Would you be more positive and accepting toward them? Would you see yourself and your past experiences in a different light? Would you become more philosophical and accepting toward what might have appeared up to now to have been a difficult time of your life? Now, let's imagine further that as you begin to turn this thought over in your mind, you begin to see possibilities that you had totally ignored up to now. Instead of unconsciously seeing yourself as a passive agent or a victim caught up in circumstances beyond your control, you begin to see yourself as an active participant in your own evolution. Now let's take this exercise a little further. Imagine that you are here on this earth to do something wonderful with your life, to become an exceptional person, and to make a significant contribution to your world. Imagine that this is all part of a great master plan that has been carefully designed with your best interest in mind, and that every event and circumstance of your life is an indispensable part of a big jigsaw puzzle, the outline of which you can only begin to see when you stand back and start to look at your life as though from a higher plane. Assume, as a general rule, that whatever your current situation or difficulty, it is exactly what you need right now to teach you something you need to know before you can continue your upward journey. In this context, try to see that every experience is a positive experience if you view it as an opportunity for growth and self-mastery. Now, project backward, and with calmness, clarity, and a positive mental attitude, think about how every previous experience and situation of your life might have been sent to you at exactly the right time for you to teach you something you needed to learn so that you could move forward toward the goal that awaits you. Imagine that the events of your life could not have been otherwise than they were, especially if you were operating on autopilot most of the time. As you stand back and develop a healthy acceptance of the incredibly complex interconnectedness of events that have brought you to where you are in life right now, you will begin to develop the perspective of the philosopher, the perspective of the superior intellect. You begin to superimpose on your experience what is called a sense of coherence, an attitude and a feeling that your life is part of something greater than yourself and that everything fits together and happens for a reason. As you think of your life as a series of events and experiences that are conspiring toward your achieving some great goal or making some great contribution to mankind, you begin to develop a sense of destiny, which is the hallmark of potential greatness as a human being. This simple series of exercises in self-awareness enable you to begin unlocking the powers of your subconscious mind. To begin, you activate the law of control by choosing consciously to view yourself as an active, creative influence in your own life. And when you take mental control, you place your hands firmly on the steering wheel of your own destiny. From there, you can begin to determine your own future. You free yourself from the law of accident when you become aware of the role of your own thoughts in directing the course of events. Things don't happen in a random and haphazard way anymore. You activate the law of cause and effect when you stand back from your day-to-day life and reflect upon the incredible number of coincidences that have shaped you into the person you are today. You see that nothing happened by accident and that everything happened and is happening right now as the result of immutable law, even if you can't see clearly where your life is going at the moment. You trigger the law of belief when you accept that your life and your experiences are leading you toward the accomplishment of something important. The more you think about this eventuality as an inevitable fact, the more likely it is to come true for you. Your beliefs do become your realities. The law of expectations kicks in as you confidently expect to gain something worthwhile, if not absolutely essential, from everything that happens to you. This attitude of confident self-expectancy makes your life into more of an adventure with exciting and unpredictable but happy events occurring to move you towards some positive outcome. You become more optimistic and cheerful as well as calm and unflappable, and your expectations do become your own self-fulfilling prophecies. Your positive, future-oriented thinking throws the switch onto the law of attraction, and you begin drawing into your life people and circumstances in harmony with your dominant thoughts of hope and optimism and confidence. The more you think of yourself and your life as uniquely blessed and important, the more your experience will reflect this attitude as a fact. Now, with the law of correspondence, when you see yourself as a very special person put on this earth with a very special purpose, your outer world of relationships, health, work, and material accomplishments begin to reflect your inner attitudes of mind. As you plant these thought seeds into your subconscious by continually holding them in your conscious mind, your subconscious begins to make all your words, feelings, and actions, and even your body language, fit a pattern consistent with your new self-concept and your new goals. You use the law of substitution continuously, knowing that your major responsibility in this process is to keep negative thoughts of fear and anger and self-doubt out of your mind by holding thoughts of faith and hope and love until they're firmly rooted and growing with a life and power of their own. You work with the law of emotion to keep your thoughts on what you desire and off any and all thoughts of fear. You develop your new attitude by constant repetition until it becomes a new habit. Most of all, you use the law of concentration all the time by dwelling continually on thoughts of courage and hope and love and belief in yourself and in the wonderful future that life has in store for you. You take time each day to sit and soak your mind in positive and uplifting thoughts, knowing and accepting that whatever you dwell upon long enough and hard enough will eventually materialize in your reality. Your job is to be patient, calm, and trusting. You'll achieve what you're meant to achieve when you're ready for it, when your mind is thoroughly prepared. Remember, whatever you want, wants you. Whatever you want is moving towards you right now, just as you are moving toward it. Your primary aim must be to get out of your own way. Incorporating a new, positive, constructive way of looking at your life with a bigger picture of past, present, and future requires thoughtfulness. Developing a superior way of thinking, a way that harmonizes all the mental laws in such a way that your whole life speeds up in an exciting way, requires that you become more alert, more aware, and more awake. At first, this may be difficult, but the payoff for you will be a heightened feeling of self-control and self-mastery, a more positive mental attitude, and a tremendous sense of empowerment in every part of your life. You will have put yourself onto the high road to maximum performance and personal achievement. Now here's another action exercise for you. Take a sheet of paper and make a list of all the things that you want to see in your life. Write down everything you can think of: happiness, health, good friends, travel, prosperity, financial success, popularity, recognition, the respect of others. Let your imagination run freely. The second part is a test. For the next 24 hours, think and talk only about the things on your list. See if you can get through one entire day without criticizing, condemning, complaining, or getting angry, upset, or worried about anything. See if you have the intestinal fortitude and strength of character to think about only what you want for one whole day. This exercise will give you a real insight into where you are in your development, and it will also show you how far you have yet to go.
If you enjoyed this program from Master Motivator and Success Coach Brian Tracy, you are probably the type of high achiever that would benefit from Brian Tracy's personal success coaching program. This one-on-one coaching program is unlike any self-development tool ever offered. Imagine spending 12 weeks with your own coach who has been personally trained by Brian Tracy. Your coach will aid you on building your life strategies, guiding you as you take action steps toward making your greatest desires a reality. If you are like many, you often set goals, but sometimes lack the motivation to carry them through. With the ongoing nurturing and guidance of your personal coach and this outstanding program, you will be accountable for the changes you want to make in your life, and you'll soon see those changes becoming a reality. Created exclusively for Nightingale Connett by Brian Tracy, this program has had massive life-changing results on those that have committed themselves to it. It consists of a minimum of 12 weeks of 30-minute one-on-one telecoaching sessions with a trained personal coach. Accompanying the program are 12 cassette tapes, one for each week of study, along with a guidebook. This extraordinary program focuses on every aspect of your life and helps to integrate and balance your life success skills along with your business growth. Brian Tracy's Personal Success Coaching Program offers you guidance in the areas of strategic planning, intelligence, health and fitness, power, career success, time management, financial planning, life success, relationships, goal setting, leadership, and building character. Your life will magically transform as you turn your conceptualized thoughts into active steps toward achieving your goals. Brian Tracy's Personal Success Coaching Program is one of the most comprehensive, powerful self-development programs to date and is designed to fit your goals, dreams, and desires both personally and professionally. Act now, today, and call in to receive further information and your free personal success profile with one of our trained personal development representatives. Designed with Brian Tracy, this profile will identify your strengths and pinpoint your growth opportunities. We offer this analysis to you at no cost and no obligation, so don't delay. To register for this outstanding coaching program or to receive your free personal success profile, call Nightingale Conet now at this number, 1-877-297-9799. That's 1-877-297-9799 and ask for Brian Tracy's personal success coaching profile. It's one phone call that could change your life.